Very good morning. Let us turn to our passage in 1 Samuel chapter 9. 1 Samuel chapter 9, and our topic for this morning is that there are no coincidences in this life. What do you mean by a coincidence? We describe it as a fortuitous turn of events where everything sort of just happens in a way which we perhaps don't expect, where the odds, the statistic probability of these things that happen are so slim that we sit up and take notice. And when these sort of things happen, we say, oh, what a coincidence, in that it is such an unlikely turn of events. Oh, so lucky. Or if it is a bad thing, it is, oh, unfortunate, unlucky. Or the dialect, you say, suay, aya, why is it like that? Should these words be in the Christian vocabulary? When we understand the ideas that God is sovereign, and we see the promises that God has, that He as the Creator, as He the one who is ruling over all things, He does uphold, direct, govern, sustain all things according to His will and His way. That everything is guided by the good hand of His providence. Everything happens according to His foreknowledge. And we realize that actually all the events of our lives, from the biggest to the smallest, all pan out or happen according to His will and His way. It has the meaning of the word providence, where literally it just means that He sees in advance, or God knows. He is all-knowing, but He is also all-powerful. And He has promised to uphold all things by the power of His glory. And what we understand then is that as He governs over all the works of His creation, He orders them according to His divine and perfect will. That is providence. In that everything that happens in this world, it is never by chance. It is never what we would understand to be a coincidence, a statistic improbability that just so happens to fall into place. No, there is a divine guiding hand working all things, working out all things. You know, just a couple of, two months ago, during church camp, just shortly before our church camp, you know, there's this family from Singapore that joined us, Brother Kenny and his family. And I think they came a couple of days early and they stayed somewhere in North Sydney. And they were out about doing their things and they were looking for a place for lunch. And so Sophie, Kenny's wife, she just took out her phone and started to look through, as we do, the cafes nearby, looking for a good place to stop and eat. And so she found one. And it was a little bit out of the ways. It was sort of at a kind of a back alley of a building. And they walk in, and lo and behold, who did they see? Our in-house barrister, Patrick. Out of all the thousands of cafes in the all of Sydney, somehow, luckily, they found Patrick's cafe. And so they went in, they saw each other, they recognized each other. And well, of course, at the end of it, they had a nice time of fellowship. Was that a coincidence? Was that a lucky meeting? Well, we would describe it as providence. God orders and ordains all things. Now, exactly why that happened, maybe we might not ever fully know the reason of, but I'm sure that through that meeting, they had a wonderful and a blessed time, even if just a brief time of fellowship. Just last week, actually, there's another sort of event that happened. As you know, Serena's sister's family came just for a few days, a short break. And, you know, in Sydney, they have another relative, actually. Actually, some of you know them, Brother Eric and Sister Mirabel. So Eric is actually Jonathan, so Joyce's husband's uncle, right? Their fathers are brothers. Because it was a very short trip, he didn't think to go and contact him. He will come back again in December, and you know, they were thinking they'll meet up then. But last Saturday, so after working bee, we went out for lunch at Macquarie Park. And after lunch, we decided to go get some dessert. We went to an ice cream place within Macquarie Center. And lo and behold, who do we see? Auntie Mirabelle. She was there, you know, I think with her grandchildren. And so out of, again, the millions of people in Sydney, the only other family, the only other person that he is that they are related to, they bump into them. And because of that, they arranged a dinner, and we had a good time of fellowship on Tuesday night. And again, these things do happen from time to time. And these are events that in our lives we sit up and take notice, that we remember them. But again, what do we put it down to? You see, if we view all things from the lens of how God is working in our lives, what we will have to straight away recognize is that now this is God's hand working, guiding us, directing us, bringing us to meet the people whom He wants us to meet, ordering our lives in the way that He intends for it to be, and it is all for our good. And time and again, we see that sort of testimony described in Scripture, that even when people do wicked, sinful, evil things against us, the assurance and the promise is that God meant it unto good. That was the testimony of Joseph, that as he looked back on his own life and all the twists and turns that life brought to him, he said this was God. God directed him. God meant it unto good. That means God ordered the events of his life according to his providence. That is the wonderful, blessed thing that, you know, all of us as believers can be assured of and be comforted of. The doctrine of God's providence in our lives. That God will always see to it. God will always plan and direct us according to his will and his way. Now, as we see this event, you know, this order of events, this narrative unfolding before us here in 1 Samuel chapter 9, now again, what we see is the working of God directing Saul from what begins with seemingly a very mundane turn of events, the loss of his father's asses, and bringing him to meet with Saul, with Samuel, the prophet Samuel, and through which he will be ordained as the future king of Israel. None of these things happened by chance. It was not a coincidence. It was God working providentially, guiding him, guiding both of them, that they will meet in the manner in which they would. So a few thoughts that we have as we consider this topic before us. Now, firstly, it is as we are introduced to the man Saul, God makes us the way we are. Again, there are no coincidences, right? As those of you who understand the process of procreation, they will say, oh, you know, out of the millions of sperm, well, there is that one that meets the mother's egg, and that is who you are. You are the product of an infinitely impossible probability that came your way. No. You are exactly as how God intended you to be. God made you, design you, or as the psalmist says, you are fearfully and wonderfully made. And that is what we can say about Saul as well. As we are introduced to him, what we are told is firstly about his family background. Right? We are introduced first to his father from the tribe of Benjamin, a man whose name was Kish. He was the son of Abiel, of Zeror, of Bechorath, and so forth. He was described as a mighty man of power. Now, what that means is probably that he came from a well-to-do family, an influential family. And so amongst the families in Benjamin, you know, this man Kish was from an influential one, and therefore Saul as well. So he was described as a mighty man of power, a man of influence, of standing, probably wealthy as well, as we can see in the following verses. He had cattle, he had asses, he had servants under his charge. And so that was a family that Saul was born into. Some people get upset by these sort of things. Well, you were born in a rich family, you were born into a poor family, you were born into this country, you were born into this race. But again, no coincidences, right? You are born exactly as you are, in the family that you are in the circumstances that you are in, even in the time period that you were born into. Some people say, oh, I wish I was born 50 years ago, 100 years ago. Oh, how I wish in this, how I wish no. You are exactly where God intends you to be. And then we are given the description of who or how Saul was. So this man Kish had a son, his name was Saul. Even in the name, the meaning of the name Saul is actually the meaning of chosen, or rather it comes from the root word from which we see the word chosen, right? The word that we actually see being used of Saul, in that, you know, God has chosen you a king, and that's the same word. And so that's the meaning of the name Saul. He was a choice young man and a goodly. And there was not among the children of Israel a goodlier person than he. So likely these phrases here refer to his outward appearance. Okay, the word goodly is just simply a very generic general term for good. But he was the most good of all of them. Okay, so basically it's to say that amongst his peers, he was really quite outstanding, unparalleled amongst his peers, at least in terms of his outward appearance. Okay, he was good looking, simply put. Very presentable, charismatic even. And he was very, very tall. Right, and that's highlighted again in verse 2, from his shoulders and upward, he was higher than any of the people. So it seemed that he was a head taller than everyone else. He was very good looking. And so just by his outward appearance, yes, he had all the qualities of a king, at least according to what the people were asking for. Right? They wanted a person that they could look up to, that could lead them. And to a degree, I mean, physical appearances do matter. He had the presence of a king. He had the image of what people would expect of a leader, right? That he's one who can stand in front of them, has that commanding presence, as the one that, you know, they look to and they say, yes, this is who we want to be our king. And again, that was not a coincidence. That is exactly as how God designed it to be. And in a way, it is to show the people, well, that this is really who you are asking for. One who looks like the kings of all the other nations. A person whom you can be proud of. But is that really the best possible choice? Because God will then show them that it is not a grand looking, you know, imposing soldier on the battlefield. But a man like David can also be one. The one who was the least among all his brethren, the one who was ignored, the one who nobody really paid attention to, but he was a man after God's own heart. And those spiritual qualities make a far better king than what you would think. But nonetheless, what we see here in this early description of Saul was, well, he had all the external trappings of one whom the world would recognize and look up to. He was from a wealthy, powerful family. He was good looking. He was tall and he had an imposing presence. And it seemed that he had everything going for him. And that's how he was made. That's what he was given to. In a way, it's not something that, you know, anyone can ever make for themselves, right? And Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount as well, how many of you, by taking thought, can ever add a cubit to your stature? Nothing. There is nothing that we can do to make ourselves taller than we want. Well, I mean, to a degree, you can groom and change your appearance to an extent, but we are who we are. We are as how God made us. The genes, the DNA within us, it is how we were made. And there is no changing that. And what that has to then lead us to do is to accept, right? Be thankful for how God has made us, families that he has placed us into, and everything that we are, it is from God. And the second thought that we have then is God sends the trials that we face, the trials of life. So, well, it is seemingly a relatively minor little trial that now Saul is faced with. So what happens? His father had certain asses, donkeys, right? And they were lost. And so he tasks his son, he says to Saul, his son, take now one of thy servants with thee and rise and go seek the asses. So a simple task, really. Not a very complicated thing. Some of the animals from the flock are missing. Go find them. And so he does. We are told that he passes through Mount Ephraim. And so that's the mount on the north of the territory of Benjamin. They're from the tribe of Benjamin, so that likely was his starting point. And he goes on a sort of a loop, a circle, right, round about the whole region. It is not entirely sure where the land of Shalisha and Shalim are, but likely it is just regions round about. That whole mountainous area of Ephraim was to the north of them, and so probably it was through various regions round about. And so they passed through all these areas, and then he passed through the land of the Benjamites, but he found them not. So it seems that what initially was a seemingly relatively simple task turned to be something quite long drawn. Probably a journey that lasted a number of days. And it seems that they were not very well prepared or not equipped. They did not expect to be out there for so long. Because later on, you know, Saul would say that they don't really have much on them. Little by way of provision, by food or money. So it seems that they weren't actually really very prepared for such a long journey. Because by verse 7, we are told that the bread is spent in our vessels. They ran out of food. Right? So it's likely something that lasted a number of days, and they were out longer than they intended to be. Which by that time, he said, you know, it's pretty late. Right? Many days have passed, and we still haven't found it. And so when they came to the land of Zuf, Saul said to his servant, come, let us return, lest my father leave caring for the asses and take thought for us. So now he was concerned that we've been gone for so long, his father would start to worry. Okay, so yes, it was a task. It was a little difficulty that he was facing, and it had now turned out to be a multi-day ordeal. Probably they had traveled 40, 50 kilometers by now, maybe about 3 or 4 days' journey. Right, long enough to be a concern for his father. Now again, was that a coincidence? No. It was a deliberate thing. But God had intended for that to happen so that in his time of desperation, then he will seek a solution, which is to enter into the city and look for the prophet to look for him. Okay, again, what we understand is that these things do not happen by chance. The trials of life that come our way, the difficulties that we face, even the small mundane tasks that we dismiss as, well, I mean, that's how life is, right? We face all these little challenges here and there, right? Little things, little inconveniences, things that perhaps will cause us to go out of our usual daily routine. They are unexpected, they are unaccounted for, but not for God, right? And when we open our spiritual eyes, when we begin to see everything through a spiritual lens and perspective, realize that anything, even a chance encounter, things that we put down to be a chance encounter, are ordered and deliberated and planned for by God. And you see, when we think about the Christian purpose and objective, right, what is this life all about? It is not just about going through life, going through your routines day after day, providing for your families, doing what we as responsible adults are supposed to do, earning our keep and things like that. And our purpose in this life is, of course, primarily spiritual. Right? We are called to be servants of the Most High God. We are called to be witnesses for Him. And what we have to then realize is that every little chance encounter, every little thing that comes our way and causes us to do certain things differently, these are likely opportunities of witness. Perhaps opportunities that we will meet people that we will otherwise not meet. We will come into contact with some that, God may send us to share the gospel with, to encourage, to bless. And we must always be on the lookout for these opportunities, right? We'll constantly think, now, why is it that God has sent me here? Why am I here? What am I here for? Okay. Now, it's not to say then that we superstitiously then look at every little thing and try to find a hidden purpose and meaning for that. No. It's not that we act strange or differently, but that if we are in line with the purpose that God has called us to, and that we are always seeking to be a witness, well, rest assured, God will send us the opportunities. And an exercise like 30 and 30, right, is one of the ways in which we are more attuned or alert, right, to these opportunities. We have an encounter. Well, what do? Share a tract. Share a word for the Lord Jesus Christ. Witness. Tell others about who we are and who the Lord Jesus Christ is. So as Saul was going about, he seemed ready to give up. And now that seemed to be a trend, right, throughout this chapter. And later on, as we look at the life and the character of Saul as well, he seems to be, you know, one that is rather guided by circumstance. He seems to be one that is more pragmatic in his solutions, but often that pragmatism, well, turns him away from God and leads him not to trust in the Lord, but in his own thinking and solutions. Right, so for him, at this point of time, he said, let us return. He was ready to give up, right? Worry about what his father would think. And so he says, let's just go back home, right? And then see how it goes from there. His servant actually now becomes the one that is more seemingly in charge of the situation, and he leads the way. Okay, he's the one that God will use to suggest a solution and bring them to Samuel. So as he faces this difficulty, this trial, then God provides a solution as the next thought, right? God makes us who we are. God sends the trials of life. And then here what we see from verse 6 to verse 9, God provides a solution. What is the solution? So the servant now says to him, behold, look, there is in this city a man of God. He's an honorable man. All that he saith comes surely to pass. And so that was a reputation of Samuel. People had known about him, and he was at this point of time described as a seer. And later on, verse 9 will explain that, well, at this point of time, anyone who wants to inquire, wants to seek the Lord, they go to the seer. And the seer literally, you know, is the person who sees, right? He sees things, he has revelation from God. But then later on, at the time of the writing of 1 Samuel, what the author says, it is akin to what we call a prophet today. Okay? The meaning of the word prophet is one who speaks, declares on behalf of the Lord. And really, it's two sides of the same coin, right? A prophet is one who receives revelation and then speaks the word of God. And likewise, as a seer. So it's just, you know, terminology, and it's to say that, you know, language changes over time, and even the Hebrew language is one that was dynamic in those days as well. So at that point of time, Samuel was known as a seer, but the author of 1 Samuel says, you know, by now, as the time of writing, we actually call him a prophet. So both words can be used interchangeably. And so we are told, or we are now introduced to Samuel from the perspective of Saul's servant. And he says, yes, there is, you know, reputed to be this man of God, and maybe, perhaps, he is in the city. We have heard wind of that happening. Again, remember, in those days, there's no way to check or verify these things, right? And a lot of times, information is not current in the way that we can just turn on our phones, Google, search, and find out everything in real time, okay? So what he told Saul is that, you know, perhaps, right, if we come to the city, I think, you know, that we can somehow be able to find this man. And if we find him, he can tell us, right? We can ask, you know, him this question, and perchance, right, he may be able to provide us a solution as a meaning of peradventure, right? Maybe. Maybe he can show us our way, and so we should go. But, you know, initially, Saul was actually pretty reluctant, because what was his response? He said to his servant, behold, if we go, what shall we bring the man? For the bread is spent in our vessels, and there is not a present to bring to the man of God. What have we? So again, you know, he is really the one to put a dampener into all these plans. And the servant is the one that has to suggest a solution for him. And out of his own pocket, imagine that, the servant is the one that says, well, here I have at hand a fourth part of a shekel of silver, so just a little bit of silver, and I will give that to the man of God to tell us our way. So a very kind servant, right, to go out of his way actually to help his master, Saul. And that's the solution that comes to them, or that comes to Saul, that God will now use this unnamed servant, we don't know who he is, to be the one to find out or to provide the solution to the problem that Saul had at hand. And it's again interesting to note that the servant is the one who knows about this whole situation, about this man of God, about this seer, and Saul doesn't seem to be very aware of all these things. So it seems, you know, from early on there is this disconnect, right, between Saul and spiritual things, and that seems to be eventually what leads to his fall, where his concern is far more for the pragmatic, the physical things, you know, than for the spiritual concerns that, you know, even his servant had at this point of time. But that was God's way, right? That was God's way of leading Samuel to Saul and Saul to Samuel, okay? Seemingly from a very mundane series of events that was happening. A lost donkey. What do we do? Go to the city, look for this man. Maybe this man can provide the solution for us. And up to this point, you know, the narration does not actually name Samuel. And he's only revealed until later. But for now, it still just seems like, oh, a very mundane story. Okay. So, verse 10, we are told that Saul finally says, all right, fine, let's do it. Okay, come, and let us go. So they went to the city where the man of God was. Now again, remember, there was no assurance as to whether he's there in the first place or when he will be there. Likely what they would know is, you know, what was revealed to us at the end of chapter 7. Remember, we are told that Samuel had this circuit in which he would travel from city to city, right? From year to year, he would go from Bethel to Gilgal to Mizpeh, and then his return to Ramah. And so he would be on the move as he would go from city to city to judge the people. Okay. And so they said, all right, let's go and let's see whether the man of God is. Let's find out where he is. Again, in those days, how do you find? You have to ask people. You have to work, find your way around. And what we will then see in the following verses up to verse 14, and also at the end of this section from verse 18 to 20, is that God arranges all our circumstances. That's the root idea that we've been saying, right? There is no coincidence. God is the one that arranges and ordains all these things as they come to pass. So let's see what happens here. So they go into the city, and as they went up the hill towards the city, they found some young ladies, some young maidens going to draw water. Now, this is again, reminiscent of some other seemingly chance encounters that we have read of in the past, right? When Jacob goes to look for a wife, right? At Laban's household, he comes upon Rachel. Right? As Abraham's servant goes and looks for the household of Laban. As Moses is out there in the wilderness, they always meet ladies at the well, right? But of course, here is not a marriage that takes place. But again, what we see is that it was not a chance encounter. It was a series of events that are arranged by God, because out of all the people that they meet, the first people that they come upon knows exactly where Samuel was. Okay? And so they ask the question. He says, oh, have you heard or do you know about the seer? Verse 12, they answered him and said, yes, indeed, he is. Behold, he is before you. Make haste now, for he came today to the city. Today. And so this very day, right? Luckily, right? Luckily, the very person they are looking for is here today. Of course it is not, right? It is all God's plan. So he says, yes, today he has come to the city, for there is a sacrifice of the people today in the high place. As soon as ye be come into the city, you shall straightway find him. Behold, he go up to the high place to eat, and the people will not eat until he come, because he doth bless the sacrifice. And so what basically what he's saying, he's, they're telling, sort of outlining his whole day's program. right? That, yeah, you are really here at the right moment, right? Because everything is arranged, everything is organized. They're there at the high place, they're waiting, and Samuel is about to arrive at any time. So if you go now, yeah, that is the very moment that you should be able to see him, right? Because he is expected to come at any moment now, right? So that was exactly what they needed to know. So out of all the people that they asked, they find these young ladies who are fully aware of the situation, and the young ladies reveal to them that, yes, you are here at the exact right moment, right? You can't have a better timing than this. And so that's exactly what they do. And they came up into the city, and when they were coming to the city, behold, Samuel came up against them for to go to the high place. So God was leading them on both sides. Because later on, we will see in verse 15, that at that point, as Saul is looking for Samuel, God is revealing himself to Samuel to say, today you are going to meet the future king. I will bring Saul to you. And so it's all narrated for us. We see both sides. And we know that this is exactly what God has intended to happen. Okay? And this is what happened. This is the facts of everything that took place. It's not a story that was made up. It was not them writing after that to dramatize the whole event. No, this is exactly as God had intended. We skip ahead first to verse 18. Okay, so verse 15 to verse 17, we are given a glimpse of, you know, what had happened prior to that on Samuel's side of things. But looking first from Saul's side of things, right, we are told that as they go up to the city, and as they will come to the city, God brings Samuel to them. But Saul doesn't know that yet, because he doesn't recognize Samuel. He just knows, according to his servant, that there is a seer that they are looking for. Okay, so you know, his approach is really just to go around asking people that he comes to. So he talked to the young maidens, the maidens directed him, say, go towards the city, you should be able to find him. And so he does that. And so Saul goes up the hill towards the city, and the first person he sees, he says, tell me, I pray thee, where the seer's house is. But who is it that he's talking to? It is Samuel. All right, that's what verse 18 tells us. So Saul drew near to Samuel in the gate. He doesn't know it yet. And so he sees a man, and he says, hey, excuse me, sir, can you tell me where the seer is? What does the seer reply? I am the seer. I am the seer. So imagine Saul's shock, surprise. Oh, it's you. Okay. It saves me all the trouble, right? I've been looking for you. And then verse 19, right? So Samuel answers Saul and says, I am the seer. Go up before me into the high place. So he invites him, says, come together. We have prepared a sacrifice. Come to the high place together with me to eat. Now, just as an aside, a lot of times when we see the high places, right, later on, during the time of kings, it is not a good thing. It is not a good place, right? Because by then they have the temple in place and they are to worship in the temple only. That's where the Ark of the Covenant is. But prior to that, before the building of the temple, right, their practice was, as they worship God, they would go up into a high place. And there's nothing superstitious or pagan at that point of time yet about that. It's simply a high vantage point, right, from which they would gather and people can come together to seek the Lord and worship. Okay, so Samuel doing this is not wrong, but later on, right, when we see the kings being condemned for that, it is because of the association to pagan worship and practices. Right, they will seek out groves and high places, right, and they will sometimes either worship Jehovah there or they would worship idols there in these places. Okay, but for now, it is just simply as it is, a place, a physical place, a high place that they were preparing to worship. And so Saul invites him. So Samuel invites Saul and says, come, let us go, and don't worry, I know exactly what you are looking for. Verse 20. As for thine asses, which were lost 3 days ago, right? I know. Set not thy mind on them, for they are found. And they are found. And then after that, he will reveal the greater task, which is, on whom is the desire of all Israel? Is it not thee and on thy father's house? Now this we will talk about next Lord's Day, right, where Samuel reveals to Saul the fact that he is the chosen one to be king. But for now, we just focus on the thought of how God is the one that arranges all these circumstances, right? Again, as I mentioned, there is no coincidence. A man's heart, the Bible tells us, devises his way. We think that we are the ones in charge of all the things. We are the ones making the decisions. We are the ones going to the places that we go to, doing the things that we do. But the Bible tells us God, the Lord, is the one that directeth his steps, right? A man's heart devises his way, and that is true. We decide to go the places that we go to, right? This morning, you woke up and you decided, let's come to church. But what we are also told that behind the scenes, God directeth his steps. God is the one leading us in our lives. And when we recognize that, this is a teaching, it's a doctrine of great comfort, of great comfort. Of course, on our part, we always seek to do that which is pleasing in the sight of the Lord, right? We seek to want to know his way, but a lot of times, well, we don't know for sure, right? Day by day, things that we do. But what we can rest assured behind is that the fact that if we are children of God, God is the one that directs our steps. He protects us, he prevents us from going to harm's way, but he's also the one who will lead us exactly and directly into the places where he wants us to be. And we can rest in that. And so we see that happening exactly for Saul. I mean, at that point of time, the greatest woe on his mind, his greatest struggle was, where do I find my father's asses? And that's all he's thinking of, right? And he's going about trying to fix that little problem at hand. But little does he know that behind the scenes, God is ordering and arranging and ordaining a far more greater plan for him. And that is to link him up with Samuel so that Samuel can ordain him as the king. And that brings us to our final point, is that as God arranges all our circumstances, God always has a divine purpose. God always has a divine purpose. And that is the final thought in verse 15 to verse 17. And so we come back to that, and we see the divine purpose that God has had all this while. And it reveals something to Samuel here. And so now the Lord had told Samuel in his ear a day before Saul came. Okay, so we are told that, before a day before this series of events, right? So Saul was still out there wandering around the region looking for his father's donkey. And, probably, he and his servants are starting to have that conversation. What shall we do? Shall we turn back? Shall we go look some more? And then God is now revealing at that same point of time to Samuel. He says, tomorrow, about this time, I will send thee a man out of the land of Benjamin. Do you see that there? What I've been talking about, right? God is the one arranging the circumstances, and that is what God had told Samuel. I will send thee. And so, on Saul's part, all he has been thinking of was a donkey, right? Where do I find it? And on the surface, it appears Saul is the one making the decisions. The servant makes the suggestions. Why don't we try going to the city, maybe look for the seer, and if we find the seer, he can tell us where the donkeys are. And so Saul deviseth his way. There was a choice, right? Do we turn home? Do we go to the city? Eventually, they decide to go to the city because of the servant's suggestions. But what we are told here behind the scenes is, I will send. God is directing his way. God is planning all these things, and he say, exactly at this time tomorrow, Samuel, you will meet with your future king. How? I will send him. Now, of course, the story behind it is, he's wandering around looking for his father's donkey. But actually what is happening, God is directing his way. Why? Because this is the man that you shall anoint to be captain over my people Israel. And he will save, and he may save my people out of the hand of the Philistines, for I have looked upon my people because their cry is come unto me. And so that comes back to the idea, the thought of they're looking for a king, right? They ask for a king, and God says, yes, I've heard their cry, and I've acceded to their request. Right? And this is the man whom I want you to now ordain as the first king of Israel. And God planned it all. God ordained all these things that come to pass. Does it happen only for the kings and the prophets and the seers? No. For all people. Because just as, you know, God is the one that sets up and establishes kings, but God is also the one to see to the most minute detail of all of us, whereby he knows even the number of the hairs on our heads. He works all things together for good to them who love him, to them who are the called according to his purpose. That is God's plan. That is the great and wonderful doctrine of God's providence over us. Because he is the almighty, powerful, sovereign God. And everything that transpires is God's plan all along. As Daniel tells us, right? He changes the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. That is what God does. He is the one who removes kings. He set up kings. He is the one who chose and called Saul and brought him to Samuel and revealed it to Samuel that this is the one, this is the man that shall be captain over my people Israel. We will use him, at least for a season, to be the one to deliver my people out of the hand of the Philistines. That was God's divine purpose. But recognize also that God has a divine plan and purpose for every single one of us, because the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord. That while we devise our footsteps, right, we think that we devise our own way, we determine our own path, the Lord is the one that directed his steps. God is the one who orders our footsteps. He guides us in the way that we should go. And he delighteth in his way. Yeah, though we fall, we will never be utterly cast down. Why? Because the Lord upholds us with his hand. And that is the promise. That God has a divine purpose. God has a plan for you and for me. Everywhere we go, every encounter that we have. And later on, as we go to the city, the very people whom God will bring before us, to walk past us, that we reach out the hand and pass them the track, the very hands that receive those tracks, these are ordered by the Lord. Some may be hostile. Some may be very, very nasty in the things that they say or maybe even do. But some may be receptive. Some may show no response whatsoever. They may even grimace or frown. But who knows what the Lord can do? Because he orders our footsteps. He arranges the circumstances. And every single of these people that we meet on the streets later on, they will have a backstory as to exactly why they are in the city at this point of time on this day. They will all have their story. Some of them will be there because they're always there every Sunday afternoon. Some will be there because this is the first time they step foot in the city of Sydney all their lives and they receive that track. But it is not a coincidence. Some will just throw them in the bin straight away. Some will keep it. Some may read it. Some may just put it in their book or their bag and never see it for the next few months, but then they'll take it out at an opportune moment. Some may just cast it aside or put it somewhere, and someone else may find it, and they will read. But God has his way. And rest assured that there is no effort wasted. It is all according to God's divine plan. And we rest assured in that. But on our part, what do? You know, we don't need to then, you know, go look mysteriously and superstitiously at every chance encounter and try to read something into it. No, on our part, we just simply continue to do what we do. We live our lives in obedience to God's will, God's truth, right? Sometimes, yes, sometimes he chooses to reveal special things to us, and we see that. But other times, I would say, for the most part of our lives, we just continue to serve God in the way that his word teaches us to. We just do what we do. And God will direct our way. God will prepare and order everything else. And so we don't need to worry, right? We don't have to continue to think and second guess and wonder, is this God's will? Is that God's will? Yeah, a lot of times we don't know. In the same way that Samuel did not realize that him going to the city is, you know, for the very purpose of him being chosen and ordained as a king. He didn't know all these things. God was working behind the scenes. In the same way, we just continue to do what we do. Like Joseph, in every circumstance that he was met with, he just did his best. And then God was the one who ordained and arranged and planned everything for him. And you know, that goes a long way in helping us to live a stress-free life. We don't have to worry, because God is the one planning. God is the one ordaining. You see, stress comes when we have a particular desired outcome. We want things to work in a certain way. It has to be that way. And then we feel that it's entirely upon us to meet that objective and achieve that purpose. But if we are able to surrender our lives to the providential God and to know that He is the one directing our footsteps, He is the one leading us in the way that we should go, then there are many things that we otherwise would worry that we don't need to worry about. We just surrender our lives to Him, wherever He leads us, whether it is with regards to our careers. There's so many things that we cannot control about the future. And we try, we strive, and we try to engineer and organize everything, hoping that things will go according to our plan. That's where stress comes in. That's where we worry and we are anxious. But we really don't have to, because God is the one. God is the one that can plan and arrange and organize all things for good. And you know, you can do everything humanly possible to try to achieve your desired objective. But if it is not God's will for you to do so, then your best efforts will fail. I'm sure Saul was trying very hard to find those donkeys, right? He probably knew the land. He knew where the donkeys probably would normally be hiding. That, you know, in the past, if they go astray, oh, this is the place I should be able to find them. But time and again, he was thwarted. Why? Because it was not God's plan for him to find it ever until he meets Samuel. And then Samuel is the one to help him and to tell him later on in chapter 10 where exactly they are. And for him, he just had to follow, be directed by the Lord, and God will lead him to that desired end. And that is how we surrender to the Lord as well. Wherever He leads, we go. Let's turn to the Lord in prayer. Our gracious, loving Heavenly Father, we thank Thee for what we have seen here as we witness the leading of Thy hand upon both Saul and Samuel. And as we think about our own lives as well, help us to remember and realize that there is indeed no thing that is by chance, no lucky or unlucky events, but all things pan out according to Thy perfect will, Thy providence for our lives. And we thank Thee for this great comfort that we can have to know that our lives are in Thy hands, and help us to rest in Thee. In Jesus' most blessed name we pray. Amen.